If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Hello, everybody. We have Katie Miner here. She is actually one of our Circle members. Welcome, Katie.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. She is from the Wonder Forest School, and we're going to learn all about this. If you are listening and not a member of our community, this is an Outdoor Classrooms tour and talk, which means that we get a sneak peek inside Katie's program and her school. And so we are going to be looking at beautiful pictures and whatnot as we go through this lovely conversation. So hop on over to join us in the Circle membership so you too can enjoy Katie and the Wonder Forest School. And here we go. Welcome, Katie. Let's get started. So if you can tell us a little bit about yourself and where you are from.
Okay. My name is Katie Miner. I am a mother and wife, mother of 5 kids. And I have been married for now 17 years. I have been working in early education for just about as long as I've been married, for about 16. And I have worked with children from 6 weeks all the way through 5th grade. So it's a very wide range, lots of different developmental stages. And so it's lots of fun. My sweet spot, I think, would probably be like 3s, 4s, and 5s. That's probably my sweet spot right there.
Awesome.
I am from Chesapeake, Virginia, which is in the Hampton Roads area. Most people probably know Virginia Beach. That's the same area. And we are a small little school. It's a small little school within Chesapeake and completely all outdoors.
Yeah. So you weren't always a nature-based educator. This wasn't something that you've been doing as a part of your teaching for years and years and years. So what can you take us back a little bit in terms of before you became a nature-based teacher?
Sure. Before I was nature-based, when I first started teaching, I was in kindergarten and very, very by the book. I didn't want to mess anything up. You tell me what to do, I will do it. It was very, very, very cookie cutter. Probably about by the end of year 2, year 3, you kind of get into your own groove. Few years, still very cookie cutter. Make sure got your deadlines and worksheets. Going down the line, I had opened up, you know, life happens, and I had opened up my own daycare. So that's where I got into the younger group. And that's where a lot of the hands-on learning came from. I had branched away from worksheets and did a lot more hands-on learning and things like that, but still pretty, I call it cut and paste crafting, you know. Mm-hmm. Cut things and you paste it. That's where it's supposed to go. Still kind of doing that type of thing. It was not until about 5 years ago. I was doing my thing and I was working at a daycare preschool at the time. And so I was approached by a coworker who had told me about this program. Some people might be familiar with it. It's called Tinker Garden. They're like little mommy and me style classes in nature. And she said, they do everything that you do. They learn through play. And it's all outside. So me being slightly, I love to learn. Okay. I'm a teacher who loves to learn. Go figure, right? Love to learn. I jumped into research and I have not been back up for air since then. It has been a huge passion of mine after learning about the developments of how all this stuff works. Been my personal mission to get it in the area and things like that. So I've only been in nature-based education for about 5 years. So
incredible. Incredible. It's amazing how that one seed of inspiration can
and that
grow.
Was it.
And the same thing happened to me. It was just like, there was no turning back. And I was teaching really child growth and development at our local community college. And I was doing I was really teaching behavior management and doing workshops and workshops and workshops for educators about behavior management until we started this children's garden, and I never turned back.
It's just that one thing, because like I said, I had slowly started separating myself from the very rigid curriculums that were out there. And by the time I got over here, it was nothing but play-based. And so it was just, hey, like, check this out. I'm like, this could be interesting. And, you know.
Yeah. So we're looking at this fabulous picture. I actually love it. It's the whole alphabet painted on stones. But can you give us an overview of the Wonder Forest School and how it has evolved over the years?
Yes. So Wonder Forest School itself, I had actually founded it. We just passed our 1 year anniversary in January. So we are very, very new. I had branched off to do my own thing there. And it actually has evolved a lot within that short amount of time. It takes place on my property in my backyard, very, very small. And I had just gathered lots of donations, lots of natural, like the stones. You'll see the little ramp things I just had in my garage from doing some kind of thing. So everything is all real type stuff. Those two trucks that you see in the picture, there's one more truck, and I think that's the only actual toys that I have. So everything's very natural. They are placed. I have like different areas within the yard and the outdoor space. So it's still very, very new.
That's why I think it's neat. I think a lot of folks that come on to the podcast think, oh, we have, you know, it has to be complete. And I think that the message is that We are where we're at, and it can be whatever phase that you're in. And I think that's wonderful to share these beginning stages.
I will say this. I've had a lot of people say that they wish they had a bigger place, or they had the money to rent out spaces. I almost did not open this year because of that reason. I was like, my space is entirely too small. I don't think I can do it. Nobody is going to take me seriously. That was a big thing for me. I wanted to be taken seriously, not just kind of like a hobby. So I almost didn't do it. And the only reason why I did is it was almost like, as weird as it is, it's almost like there was a sign. I was on a couple of like four school groups, and someone just asked a question, hey, how small is your space? And there was hundreds of people that said that they came from smaller spaces. So I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to grab things from thrift stores and grab things off the curbs. And I just started.
Message. And again, talking about different spaces, talking about the size, but I think that that's monkey mind. I call that the negative self-talk can also talk you out of you're about to jump off the cliff and take a risk and do something, but there's always that monkey mind that's going to tell you not to do it. So for those that are listening, this is a great example of saying, thank you for sharing, monkey mind. I'm going to go ahead and do it. But also, I love how you, because I'm also a believer in looking for signs in the universe that say, yes,
you should
go ahead and do that. It doesn't sound crazy. It's totally something I do as well. And I think it's important even for listeners. It's just, we are nature-based educators and listening to what comes in, things that are happening and observing. And I love that you got that little message. So
yes.
Are there any other descriptions of this, how you're just, do you run different classes? How does your program run?
So they are part-time programs. I have a preschool and kindergarten, which is ages 3 to 6, and they are half days, 3 days a week, 2 to 3 days a week. And then I also do a homeschool enrichment program for grades 1 through 5. And again, those are half days, 2 days a week. So
Perfect.
They are part-time courses, all outdoors.
And was it hard to find people to fill? Was it something that was like, oh, I can't get the people? Or were they just like lining up? Or is it a little bit of both?
A little, I think people were very intrigued. Mm. I'll say that. It's very, it's not something that's overly popular in my area. So it is a very new concept. And people were intrigued, but weren't sure what it was all about, if that makes sense. So it did start off very small. And it's also quite hard to kind of show and, show the public what exactly you're doing or how each child is progressing when there are no worksheets or they don't take things home. So I have to use pictures and video, but I also respect the privacy of my families as well. So, and I am the only one at the moment currently. So some things don't get documented because, I'm involved as well and I'm engaged with the children. So sometimes it's a little hard as far as outreach. So it's one of those things that you kind of have to see it to get it sometimes. The interest and the eyes were not hard to get. It was the actual jump saying, let's go do it was a little needed a little bit of a build up. But well, I think we're rocking and rolling now. But
then that's all part of the journey. It's really part of the journey. If we are running our own businesses, if we're starting up programs, if we're in an area where it's kind of a foreign idea, you're part of educating the parents in your community as well, because you are spearheading and leading this movement within your community, which is fabulous.
And it's really building a community too, trying to get, I do have other nature from the kindergarten courses that I had taught. I do have a few other nature-based colleagues. And so it's lots of word of mouth and it just sometimes takes time. So, but it was a little odd here because it's just not something you see all the time.
Yeah. Well, you're also a Circle member. So you've got community within our community as well. And I know that we also have a few that are from Virginia. Can you tell us a little bit about the rhythm and the program flow of your outdoor classroom for school? How do you kind of keep a rhythm to the day?
The parents drop off and we are not really fixated on time schedules per se until the end of the day at lunch during pickup, obviously. But throughout the day, we are not led by the clock. I'm led by the kids. So if they're engaged in one part or in one particular play area or one particular whatever that they're doing, we kind of sit there for a little bit and kind of move. But there is a flow, just a first, second, and third type thing. So I feed them the first time. The first thing that we do when they come in is kind of mingle, hey, what are you doing? And then I feed them because I'm going to eliminate that issue right off the bat. So they come in, have snack. We do a quote unquote circle, not quite a circle. It's more like a square, a rectangle. It's a morning meeting type thing where we kind of talk about the weather. We have share. What did we do? We do a little bit of animal yoga with the kids, just kind of getting our minds ready and observing, doing land acknowledgement. And then I will usually present some kind of materials or I'll read a book that has stemmed different things too. We are about 10% teacher directed and 90% child led. So most of the day is all child led. The only parts that are really teacher directed is materials that I bring into their play. So I may start with something and then they branch off with it. So I present and show them these cool things, or if they have found, it was a rainy day one time, mushrooms were growing everywhere. So we talked about all that day, but we'll have some of that type of play. And then we head off to our forest and we have a creek out there. They were infatuated with again, mushrooms. They tracked animal tracking. They loved that. And we go out into the forest. They do a lot of engineering out there and exploring. Right now, they have been watching for tadpoles because we know the frogs are coming soon. So they have been on the lookout for tadpoles every single day.
Fun. And so do you have access? So you have your yard at your... Is your yard have access to... Is it public land?
It is the public forest? Land, but... Where I live is kind of, they built a bunch of houses inside a forest, not a forest, it's like a wooded area. So our forest it's a nature trail that's behind the house. So we kind of walk out and go down into the forest.
That's wonderful. What a gift to have that right there.
And I was just about to
say, it's a gift. Yeah. Really, there's another circle member who has the same type of thing. It's her house. And it's a home program as well. They have access to a beautiful forest. So it's just so interesting to hear folks from all over the world that are kind of have a similar setup from it to each other. Do you have a theory around risk play? And I hear wonderful stories, your story about, really following the child and being child led. And what happens when the play gets a little risky? And what's your theory and how do you manage it?
I love it. It does give me anxiety attacks every so often. I tell parents, I am not immune to being worried, but as long as it doesn't become dangerous where they end up in hospitals, things like that, I encourage it. We do risk safely, if that makes sense. You do risky things safely as long as it doesn't become hazardous. And I really think that when you're in nature in general, it comes with natural risk anyway. You're going to get splinters, or if you walk where... We're all about bare feet. So when you're walking around barefoot, things happen and those are considered risks. The materials that I use, such as hammers, nails, gardening tools, those type of things, sharper objects, those are all risky type of materials as well. So I am on the lookout. I am observing. I am there. I am present. And I encourage it. I think that's where they really learn where their limits are. I have seen children, when they walk across these logs, they are so frightened. And I am so proud of myself, by the way. I have completely gotten be careful out of my vocabulary. There's no more be careful, which is huge for me, trust me. It's all about, do you feel safe? And after a while, after they start understanding what I mean by that through me modeling, because there are certain, I am older now and certain falls are going to hurt me a little more nowadays. So they'll race down we have these little bridges back there. They'll race down them. I'm like, I'm going to go around here. They're like, Miss Katie, why? I said, I don't feel safe going down there right now. So they are starting to understand what that feeling is. And to see a child go from very, very nervous to doing something and having the opportunity to be able to take those risks and take those chances every day while they're out there, they grow so much. And then that look on their face when they finally are able to get it, and whatever way that they're able to do it, is so amazing. I feel so happy for them. I have one, again, I think I just cut myself off, but I had one that was so terrified to walk across this log. Wasn't a high log. If this child would have fell, it maybe some scrapes, nothing major, but their friends were able to like race across this thing. They were not. After a while, a few weeks, maybe even a month, it was a while, they started kind of crawling over it. And I was like, yay. And they're like, yes, I feel safe doing that. I'm like, yeah. So, and then after a while, little baby steps, they still kind of speed crawl across it at that point. But when I really feel like when you're taking those risks and allowing them to do risky play, they can figure out what's best for their own bodies, how their bodies work, where they feel safe at, and so much growth with it. It's risky play all the way.
I love how you're giving them the vocabulary in terms of really being able to identify what they're feeling and actually put that, articulating that into words. And I love your doing risk safely. I love that. And it's so important because it is where I too believe that it's where kids are learning the most, and where we adults also need to learn to step back and keep our mouths shut.
Right.
Really learn how to.
They really do ask for help when they need it. And they'll kind of look at you to make sure things are okay. So again, in my experience, it doesn't take very long for them to, is this okay? I think it's okay type things. And if they're not sure, they ask, they look back, or they give you some kind of signal. But yeah, it's definitely us adults that are like, I still do it. I'll sit back and I'm like sweating over there. Right. I'm like,
So where do you find, you say that you set things up for your children and their invitations for learning. And you've also mentioned that you're also 90% child led and kid will go and explore. So with that small percentage of curriculum that you are guiding a little bit or introducing, shall I say, invitations for learning, where do you find that? Where do you find it? Where's your source of inspiration?
Again, I have been in the education field for a really long time. So I have kind of pulled things, I've Frankenstein things, I call it. I've pulled things from different places. There's actually a curriculum out there called Wild Learning. I really like them a lot. So I've pulled things from there. I have pulled things from Tinker Garden. I have pulled things from the Waldorf.
Yeah, we did. We just had a workshop on that.
And a little bit of Regio in there. So I really do kind of just pull things from different areas and make it my own. I can't really say this is where it is from. It's a little bit of everything. So
yeah, I'm very similar. I'm very similar. I never could actually sit with one Montessori, or I like to sort of pull from all the different philosophies and
they're so beautiful. They're so beautiful. So I love certain parts of it, and I just don't feel like you have to be restricted to one.
So is it difficult running your own business? So you at one point, it's very, very young, which I want to reiterate to folks that yes, you can come on the podcast when you have a very young program. And it's exciting. It's exciting because you're learning as you go. I know in my own business that it's a constant learning curve, which is actually something that I love. Is there something, any tips or tricks that you've kind of learned along the way that about running a business? You're running it out of your home. Any tips or tricks that you can share for our listeners?
Like you said, I am very new, so I am still kind of learning, but really stay up to date with state regulations type stuff. Always make sure as a newbie, I almost missed my yearly registration because I wasn't thinking. So really, I write everything down. I plan everything. And really just make sure you stay up to date with all those regulations. Form a community. I mean, community is everything. I can't say that enough. Form a community. This field is one of the most collaborative fields, I think, out there. So when you build that community, people are able to help you. Reach out. Don't be scared to talk to other people who are older than you. When I say older, I mean like in it for a longer time. And just don't be afraid to ask for help. You don't have to do things alone. I have that problem. I had started doing things on my own, and I realized I was very overwhelmed. And I was just getting confused about things a lot. So I definitely had to remember that there are people out there that are willing to help you. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And again, that's one of the reasons in our circle community, and that's you being a part of that is so exciting as well. So yes, we are a network and a collaborative force, and together we can do great, great things in getting that word out. So if you were to give one seed of inspiration or tip to either an educator or a parent, I also see educators as parents. What would that be if you were to give one seed of inspiration?
Go outside. and lots of people, and I'm telling you, lots of people are like, how do I start with nature-based learning? And go outside. That's yeah. all you have to
open,
do.
Open the door.
You got to get out there. And that sounds funny and it sounds like common sense, but when you go out there, a lot of we were talking about curriculum, a lot of it is out there already. And we had just hit our spring equinox, right? So the classroom completely changes. You're able to go outside and see what is out there, see how it's changing, see how you know the signs of spring are coming and why things are coming out there. So really go outside. And just let them play. I promise, they are going to show you what they're interested in, show you what they're ready to learn, what developmental stage they are in. And it sounds so simple, but it really is in that aspect, it really is that simple. Just be, nature is going to be a guide for you. So
yeah. Beautifully said. It's so true. And it's a win-win. I think when kids are happy, the adults are happy. When the adults yes. are happy, the kids are happy. And everybody's happier when they're outside.
Everybody is. Amazing.
Everybody's happier.
The sun comes out and everyone's in a better mood.
Yes. So is there anything else that you'd like to share with our community that we may have missed? Or then if not, then where can we find you?
Of course. So yes, I am on Instagram and Facebook under Wonderforce School. Wonderforce is all one word, school. I also have a small TikTok as well. And I have a little website too, which is wonderforceschool.square.site.
Great. We will put that all in the show notes so people can find you. And I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank you for all the work that you've done. I love that you are a Circle member, and this is a wonderful way for all of us in our community to get to know you and what you're all about.
And I'm so excited to learn from you guys too. So,
yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. So thank you again for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us here at the Outdoor Classrooms podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with anybody who you think would enjoy it and follow us on Instagram. We'd love to continue the conversation. If you want to continue the conversation even deeper, please join us in the Circle community. The purpose of the Circle is to support, guide, and push you as you continually grow and sustain your outdoor classroom by providing the tools to help you set the right goals, then actually follow through in achieving those goals with the support of our amazing community. Each month, 24/7, you get guidance and support from myself. You get to begin your journey with our new member roadmap. You get access to our outdoor teaching bootcamp. You get to interact and learn from guest experts who are on our podcast. They come into our membership and join us to continue the conversations. You get to connect and collaborate during 2 live sessions a month. You get access to all our online workshops and masterclasses. You get to dig deeper with our membership missions each month, and you get to become an ambassador of joy for children. I hope you can join us. You get all of this. You get to become a member of our family at Outdoor Classroom. So I hope you can join us. I will share the link in the show notes, and we'll see you later. Come join us.